Well, now we're moving on. Last week, the bodies of hundreds of victims of flight MH17 were transported from Ukraine to the Netherlands. But many families are still awaiting the return of their loved ones. And grieving in the absence of a body is a much more complicated process than having a body. The experience can cover everything, really, from miscarriage to missing persons. I'm joined now to hear a little of this process by Professor Jim Lucy, who is the Medical Director of St. Patrick's Hospital and who's also Clinical Professor of Psychiatry at Trinity College. Professor Jim Lucy, thanks for coming in to us again this morning.
Thanks, Keelan, for having us.
Just talk to us about the process of grief. I mean, how it works and what it means when you don't have that body in front of you that tells you 100% for sure your loved one is dead.
The grief involved in a death is about pain and loss, and every one of us will be bereaved, and our listeners are going through this pain, many of them currently. But the special grief of the loss when the body isn't available, when it can't be found, is exquisitely painful. Many of us will know about the stages of grief, the work of Enid Kubler-Ross, and the moving from denial and separation and through anger to acceptance. Her work was theorised. It was based on theory and observation. We now know from empirical observation that not everyone grieves in the same way, and not every grief goes through the same stages. And in fact, particular pain is experienced by those people who can't identify the body, who can't confirm the death and can't celebrate the life because they haven't got the body there to see.
And, you know, Jim, that denial phase, and if people do go through the phases as is, they will stay much longer in it.
Well, we now know from studies, people like Colin Murray-Parks and Mendelowitz have studied this, not everybody goes through the stages, and many people are resilient. But we know that the particular kinds of grief that are exceptionally difficult, the unresolved griefs, include particular patterns such as the unexpected, the tragic death, the completely unanticipated death of a child, the violent loss of a child where no body is found. This is well recognised as being particularly, exceptionally difficult. The human being needs to both acknowledge the reality of the death. We have a very rich culture of a management of a response to death in our society. It's one of the values of Irish life, in a sense. And we do that because we come together to acknowledge the pain. But in fact, we also need to celebrate the reality of the life by having the body. Imagine when you can do neither. You can neither accept the reality of the passing nor celebrate the existence of the life because you don't have the body. And people who have that experience have a prolonged grief, often a particularly tortured grief, because they're not able to both celebrate and acknowledge, to actually feel the pain and begin the process of working through, if at all possible, to the point of acceptance. Now, I'm not suggesting that there is acceptance in which life is ever the same, but people do respond to bereavement and recover. And we have to celebrate the fact that human beings are about recovery, but they do so much more readily when they have the tangible evidence. When they haven't got that, it's very difficult to actually celebrate and also to acknowledge the pain and integrate that in meaning so that we go forward. In fact, in many ways, the German experience, the experience of working through the past, they have a great word for it, Vergangenheitsbewältigung. It means working through the past in order to understand the present. And that working through means you have to celebrate memorial, have to have actually an acknowledgement of the loss.
Absolutely. Jim, I suppose in our own history, an area where very often in the past we didn't allow people access to the bodies was around the area of birth. And I'm also joined this morning by Mary Cregan. Mary, you're a social worker, but you had a child who was stillborn some years ago. Can you talk to me about the extra grief, if you like, there that has not always been fully acknowledged in Irish society, or indeed in many other societies?
I think there's a much greater understanding of stillbirth and neonatal death now, and as Jim was saying, that grief is a process and there's no quick way through it. I think one of the reasons that I probably maybe got through my situation a bit better was I got such good care after she had died in the hospital, and also because I was well into my 40s when I had her and was able to stand up and say what I wanted. I knew what I was going through was absolutely horrendous and it couldn't be normal. And I was saying, one of my friends said, look, you're either in a full-blown psychosis or every other woman that has lost a child and a father too, of course, is going through this as well. So I started to research it and to see, look, you know, what is different about this. And of course, it States, if you are giving birth to a child who's already left the world, it's an incredible experience. It's very, it can be physically tortuous and there's nothing at the end of it. I think I was a bit afraid of my baby when she was born, but I got help through that. And I was thinking, you know, if you were 21 having your first child, how horrendous this must be. Since then, we've, with a few friends of mine, we formed Failacon, which is a stillbirth support organisation. And an awful lot of the people we give support to are families who lost their babies in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s, who did not get the support that we got. And they're now coming forward through our services. And that would be the remembrance services, as well as the social work services and psychotherapy services. And sometimes you might find the father will come forward, because at the time he would have buried the baby. He would might have had a glimpse of his child. And as grieving was very different back then, but so was pregnancy and birth, that dads were not involved in the pregnancy and they certainly weren't involved in the birth. So the first they knew sometimes that the baby had died is they were handed a swaddled baby or a baby in a coffin and told, bury this now before sundown and sun up. And I can only tell you about the suffering. And there is, some of this is hidden for years and it manifests maybe they suddenly have a grandchild and it all comes back, or that one of them has died and they want the baby's name on the headstone. We do an awful lot of work of that. A lot of people are very surprised that there actually are records about where babies are buried and that they can get their notes from the hospital. And, you know, sometimes you're handing them their baby's lifetime and that can be very powerful. But
And Mary, going back to your own story, I mean, I know you had experienced loss in your life before that. I think your sister had died, your mother had died. But the death of your daughter, though you'd never known, as you say, your daughter, you'd carried her for 9 months, it was different. It was a different type of grief.
I never thought you could feel so bad and still be alive. I was ashamed. I was guilty. I was frightened. I was absolutely terrified. I was terrified my other children would go out and something was going to happen to them. I had absolutely no control over this. There was no reason why she died.
Really? You never got an explanation?
No, I didn't. But I didn't have a post-mortem because I was afraid of that too. And I think if somebody had maybe explained it a bit better, and we're addressing that in Failacon now and very successfully with the professionals involved, that you just need to be talked through it. I was just afraid that they'd, you know, mess
her
up a bit
more. Of your daughter?
I just didn't. Oh, she was macerated when she was born, which would be, you know, she was dead 3 days by the time I managed to have her. And she looked different. I wasn't prepared for how this would be. And I carried that guilt forever that I wasn't the first person to touch her after she was born. Whereas now I wish I had. I was guilty about the fact that I allowed, you know, my husband had to carry the coffin out covered in a blanket and we had to wait till there was no one there in case we'd upset someone. Well, I don't think they could have been any bit as upset as I was. You know, I felt that we were less people because we had to hide what happened. Like, I was very proud of her in the end and I wish we had carried her out in our arms, you know, maybe not advertising what had happened, but that she was carried out like other babies are. And I hear that an awful lot in the support groups and in the support services.
I suppose nobody prepares you for that possibility,
no,
do they?
No, nobody prepares you. I mean, but the melancholy is so profound and it's very personal and individual. Yeah. It's not possible to generalise about this. Each person's reaction is going to be different.
Yeah. Mm. And even when you talk about miscarriage to people, I mean, I think often people will go, sure, you know, isn't it 1 in 4? Mm. Isn't it normal? And people almost don't allow people to grieve for children they haven't known.
I think there is a tendency, a danger of being insensitive to people who've been bereaved by miscarriage. There's no doubt about it that people feel very easily hurt by, you know, the easy line we've just said, you know. And it's very difficult for us to sort of say, well, where's the body? The reality is the mother knows, the pain they experience can't be really denied easily by them, but everybody else moves on. I think we talked earlier, Mary, about what it means to move on, and we talk easily as though moving on was something we should all just get on with. And actually moving on is a much more integrative and positive experience if we acknowledge the pain.
How did it work for you, Mary? I mean, how long did it take you? I mean, I'm sure you never fully come to terms with what's happened, but how long did it take before you felt in any way normal again?
I'm always afraid to say the amount of time, because people are newly bereaved now thinking, oh God, you know, I can't go through this, because at the time I really did not know how I could be in this pain and be alive. But I had huge support and my baby was acknowledged everywhere. My friends acknowledged her, my family did. And a lot of people tell us that their families don't acknowledge the children. And also I knew that it had to get better because otherwise the human race would end because we could, it had to get better. And then once I accepted, look, this is it, she's gone, make your life, I started getting better, if that makes sense to you.
I started getting better
once I realised I was kind of screwed, you know. So I just did start getting better, and also starting to do something for the children, you know, or for the other families, yeah.
And transcending things by helping others is a huge way of recovering.
Yeah, I mean, some of the stories you were saying, that these women, they go back 40, 50 years. Yeah. Mm. You were involved in finding graves, finding coffins.
Yeah.
What has it meant to some of the women that you have dealt with?
Well, the emails we get and the, you know, I get a lot of prayers from them, which I'm kind of grateful for in the work we do, you know, that we get ways that they want to thank us. A lot of them will make gowns, burial gowns for babies who are dying at the moment, and go into the memory boxes that we supply to the hospital. And they just say that they feel a lightening, and I can understand that there's a lightening of their lives, that they now know where their baby is, and they have their baby named, and that their baby counted, their baby mattered.
That's the big thing, isn't it?
Well, it seems a natural thing to want to do, to memorialise. And it's one of the ways we manage the pain of loss. We put a headstone there. None of us think that actually none of these will last into the millennia by any means, but we've remembered and we've acknowledged in our time.
And the idea of losing a child at birth, I suppose you're going through a period where everything is ahead of you.
Mm.
It's very, very different to losing someone at the end of their life.
Every stage, there's a particular loss there. There's loss of the potential as well as the past.
Yeah, and they grow up with you. Like, I don't think of babies now, I think of a little 8-year-old who should have made her communion or whatever she should be doing.
Really, you brought her along child, with you through
life. She is. It's 8-year-olds now I'm curious about and love to know
what they're doing.
Liliana, I named her after a Romanian woman I work with in Romania.
Really? And if anybody wants to get in touch with you,
it's Felicon. And it's
Felicon?
Yeah, it's 085-249-6464.
249-6464.
Or info at Felicon or admin at Felicon. There's a website
and
Facebook.
And if people want to ring our support line, we can direct them to that. It's 01-249-3333.
Okay, 249-3333. 01-249-3333, is it?
01-249-3333.
Okay, well, listen, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much,
both of you, for coming into us this morning.